Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, this is Stonewall Live, live from Fort Lauderdale. My name is Nate Klarfeld, the best of gay and lesbian book, film, and media talk on Blog Talk Radio. Tonight, I've got Jonathan D. Lovitz, who's been with us before after his stint on Setup Squad and his social activism last year. And now, as an accomplished stage and screen actor, Jonathan is now a full-time advocate for the GLBT community. Good evening, Jonathan. I'm going to turn that back on, the Dixie Cups. How are you? How are you not doing tonight?
I'm great. Hi, everybody. It's so good to be back.
It is great to be back. Our last show had a huge following. I don't know if it was the MTV people or just your face and my face, but it was one a big hit. And I'm sure tonight will be too. What a week. Oh, my God.
Week.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So what did this all mean to you?
Well, I mean, for anyone who's following, the struggles in the community, this is just such an exciting time. And one of the things that's great is the amount of mobility that this has brought the movement. People finally finding some way to get involved, because it does kind of, the amount of traveling and speaking I do for the community, I encounter so many people who just say, I don't know where to begin. I want to help. I want to be an advocate or an activist. I don't know where to begin. And when something this exciting and motivating and with such huge implications comes around, once a lifetime,
yes.
People found, whether it's as small as changing your profile picture on Facebook to as large as marching in Washington and signing your name to an amicus brief and, finding, major ways to influence policy, people see that there are so many ways to get involved. And I think that's such an exciting thing about such a huge national issue like this. I mean, this is the civil rights issue of our time, of
yes.
our generation, and it's...
Mm-hmm.
We are living through history, and it's just so phenomenal to be a part of this.
You know, what was going through my mind when I was watching, I was glued to the TV, of course, like everybody else, Tuesday and Wednesday, and I said, this is like the beginning of our Emancipation Proclamation. This is, I mean, yes, the president mentioned us in a speech, but this is real. This is happening.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, absolutely.
It's amazing. Yeah, it's amazing.
And
so
it's great. And one thing it's been hard. There are so many layers to this story, and not a whole lot of understanding. No one really has gone out of their way to kind of help clarify this for everyone. The difference between the Prop 8 versus the Delma case and its implications. Should we win both cases or one or the other? And it's been nice to see so many really brilliant writers like that. Two people I could not imagine getting through this week without are, Chris Geidner at BuzzFeed and Pamela Bazelon from Slate. The two of them are two just brilliant legal thinkers and, friends of the community. And I hope that anyone who's listening checks out their article on what's going on with Doma and where things go from here.
Mm-hmm. Right. We're going to talk about that in specifics a little later, but I've got some other questions. We talked about this earlier. I've been interviewed this week by a couple of newspapers, and I've had some odd questions. So I've decided to ask you my odd questions. Where do you get your gay news?
Where
did you watch? How did you watch the proceedings? Were you on Twitter? Were you on Facebook? Were you online at SCOTUS.com? I mean, where were you Tuesday and Wednesday?
I was glued to my computer Tuesday and Wednesday. I actually tuned to C-SPAN when the audio recordings were released, just because I wanted it spin-free. I tend to watch things like the State of the Union and that sort of thing on C-SPAN, just because I don't want all the narrative around it. I want to just enjoy the moment. But I, I'm one of those total policy ones who took the time to print and read and kind of go through and highlight some exciting things in the transcript. And I was joking with a friend of mine earlier that I can't wait till, we can all get married and anyone who was nerdy enough to print out the transcripts can cut them up into cocktail napkins to use at their wedding.
Well, I'm going to put. I think I'm going to put some of the quotes from the Supreme Court justices on my napkins.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Well, I mean, if that being said, I'm sitting here with my glass of Ruth Bader Ginsburg skim milk, since that's the kind of marriage that we can have. There were some good zingers in this trial.
And Judge Sotomayor, and that was fabulous. I mean, that was just some great stuff. I mean, yeah, and a lot of people. I mean, there's a group of people out there, and we talked about this when we were doing a little pre-chat. As the statistics from the Williams Institute out in California now say that 72% of all Americans know personally a gay person. And there's about – that means 28% of the population is out there and never – kind of knows us only by looking at TV or reading about us or hearing something from a pulpit or something like that. How do you think they are looking at this 2 days of nonstop news on every channel? How do you think they're reacting?
You know, I think a little bit of sensory overload is good for people. If nothing else, you know, if this story is so big that it's going to, interrupt your regularly scheduled broadcast for news from the Supreme Court, I think that's pretty awesome. And I think it's exciting that, you know, for that 28% of people who don't realize that probably someone that lives in their house might be gay, that it's an exciting time to realize that this is so important and so pervasive an issue that it is going to cut into the news broadcast of every network, no matter what their stance. So it's a good thing that it's kind of everywhere. Although that great little quote from Scalia about "I'm just so tired that all I'm going to hear about all week is gay people." How do you think we feel that we have to look at chalk illustrations of your face every day?
Right, and here's some of the hate and some of the hate steps that the backlash that this has caused. What do you say about this? You know, Brian Fisher saying that it's going to be the end of American capitalism. Jerry Falwell says that this is going to be the end of Christianity. Christians are going to be persecuted because there's gay marriage. How are you reacting when you read that or hear that?
I can't wait for that, you know, that weekend after the ruling comes out in June and the world doesn't end. I think it's going to be the same. It's that Bugs Bunny cartoon with the Martian that, I thought there was going to be a big kaboom. When they realize nothing's changed except for the fact that America finally is the land of the free and equal, which is what I would imagine most people on the right wing, would stand up and use their Second Amendment rights to uphold anyway. When they see that we're actually fulfilling the American promise, I think people might actually come around to this. And what I found particularly interesting, a lot of the arguments in both days of oral discussion at the court, there really wasn't a whole lot of broach of the subject of religion. Not that it should be in the court, but you would think that from the right, and even some of their briefs, you would hear more of a kind of a hateful stance, more of the bigotry, more of that which has brought us to this place. Specifically, when Justice Kagan brought up the fact that here is this big red flag from the 96 House report on DOMA saying, this is a document that is clearly full of, I'm trying to find the quote. There it is. Moral judgment to express moral disapproval of homosexuality. That's coming right from the House of Representatives report on DOMA. So no one had to say anything offensive that hadn't already been published on the subject. And I think that's that's pretty telling right there, that all of the hate was being kept to the blog and to the angry speakers on the street and not making its way to the court. This is going to be decided fully on the merits of what is best for the future of American equality.
Well, we're going to get into those details right now. Judge Sotomayor was talking about that this should not have anything to do with any moral judgment, and it seems like – let's go back to the Prop 8 day. That was Tuesday. Sure. It seemed like most – all of the discussion, I didn't hear anything about – you know, the right way to do it. I heard the procreation story, which was hilarious with Ruth Bader Ginsburg. I think that was that Elaine Kagan?
Where they were talking about
55-year-old getting out of marriage.
Yeah. Right. That was, I think it was Kagan saying, like, you know, I don't think it's okay for us to talk about, you know, age
right.
and fertility here. I don't think that's really germane.
Right. Considering Justice Roberts' wife was in her 40s when they adopted, obviously there was an issue there, because I'm sure that he would have loved to have his
Jeep. And on that subject, while I'm glad that there aren't cameras in the courtroom so that this doesn't turn into political theater, it would be really great to have those extra shots of, you know, panning to the Chief Justice's lesbian cousin with a smirk on her face in the audience.
Right.
You know,
there
are moments where you do wish there were a couple of really good pay-per-view cameras in there.
Right, exactly. But back to the thing. There's a lot of talk about standing and should this case have even been brought to the court. And there's a lot of the pundits, Jeffrey Toobin and some of the people you mentioned from Gawker and BuzzFeed. They've also said that there's a good chance that they're not going to hear it, that they're going to say, you know, we presumptively decline or something. There's some fancy word that says, sorry, you wasted your time, but no hearing. But, why do you think that's happening? Why did they accept the case if they are going to probably maybe not hear it even? Do you think there was some good reason for that?
Well, I mean, they even said it on the first day of argument that there is a pretty, you know, steep case log that they could choose which cases to bring up in respect to either states' rights in the case of the DOMA decision or Prop 8, where it's more of an equal protection discussion, and there's plenty of other cases they could have chosen. There's you know, the court in deciding it also does have an eye on history and an eye on media play, although they swear that they don't.
Mm-hmm.
They know that these particular cases have a following and have some good media merit, if you will, that I think you know, it factored into these being the particular decisions that they wanted to look at.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in trying to explain this to some friends who really were looking for kind of the Cliff's Notes answer to what the heck's going on in these 2 days, it's been difficult because you really want to say that these two cases are going to be the be all end all of the gay marriage discussion, and they're really not.
No,
you know, with Prop 8, we'll be very lucky if this is either deferred to the lower court decision of unconstitutionality or you know, deemed so by the Supreme Court that the state of California has to protect and include all of its citizens equally under the law as a broader constitutional measure. Whereas with this DOMA decision, you know, as someone who lives in New York and would like to get married here, I would like to, that decision says that if things go our way, my marriage here that entitles me to everything under the law in New York State also gives me all the perks, benefits, you know, bells and whistles, and I think it's 1,100
1,138.
Right.
Wow, I have the number.
Amazing. And you know, and to think that that people are making arguments, which you know we heard them get shot down. I think it was by Justice Kennedy when he said, when people were trying to say, "Oh, we're just trying to help the states out. We don't want this to get confusing with you know the gay couple in New York that gets benefits, but it's you know they want to move to Oklahoma." You know, what are we going to do with their Social Security? Our head's going to explode.
And
I think that's a pretty shady way around this discussion.
Right. Yeah. It's kind of like there. You know, you talk to some people and they say they have nothing to do with each other. That they're two separate cases. One has to do with a very narrow.
Right.
State Supreme Court decision that says that, you know, if you give marriage to some people and take it away, you have to give it back to them. I mean, basically, that was the last thing. And so this narrow decision that if they decide to rule on that or not rule on that would just give legal marriage to California. And then DOMA, I think what they're doing with federal benefits is, you know, it looks like, and as I said, I think Jeffrey Toobin said there was like an 80% chance of it being like a 10-state solution, that we'll have 10 states that have gay marriage with federal benefits. However, here's the part that a lot of people this is the shady part, is the 14th Amendment of the Constitution of the United States of America, which it's like complicated, but it says that, you know, that citizens of one state have the rights of the citizens of another state. In other words, I get married in New York, I can move to Florida. I give a driver's license here, I can drive somewhere else. So it's a real slippery slope that it could be interpreted by some states' attorney generals or federal judges in certain districts that if both of those things happen at the same time, which they might, we might have a lot of confusion. Do you agree with that?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. I mean, it is. It's a little scary to think that we live in this country with a hodgepodge of so many laws when other sweeping changes, you know, Roe v. Wade, for example, happened, you know, was a nationwide blanket law that helped clear up the fact that some states were regulating in ways that others weren't. You know, the same was true with the Loving decision regarding interracial marriage. I'm still waiting for a really great explanation of why that isn't the same precedent here. This couple that got married in D.C. interracially went home and were immediately arrested for their interracial marriage.
That's what I don't get. I just don't get why. And, you know, it took Florida 8.5 years to change the law. I mean, people still got married. They still had interracial marriage here. You know, clerks and judges recognized it. But then there's a lag period again. You know, you and I are both Floridians, so we know things are strange down here. And we have strange laws. You know, everybody's got these weird laws on the books. And, you know, it took them the longest. We were one of the last states. Florida was one of the last states to actually take out segregation in state law after Brown versus Board of Education. So we're going to go through 50 state legislatures, even if there is a broad ruling. If there's a narrow ruling, God only knows what's going to happen.
Right.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, at the end of the day, one of the things that's going to be really that I think is so exciting about this is finally, I mean, literally, we got our day in court as a community. And what is going to be, for me, I think one of the most exciting things that's going to come from this is now the precedent has been set forth that we are, and it's now in the record, with all this discussion among the justices, we are eligible to be considered one of these protected classes, like women, like African Americans, like those who have otherwise been disenfranchised, like the gay community. You know, the red flag was sent up. You know, and things like fear and animus that have been used against the gay community were brought up and represented here, and hopefully this will lead toward the protection of the gay community as one of these classes that receives special scrutiny by the courts. Which, you know, when all is said and done here, and the dust settles on marriage in these, you know, 9 states, there's still going to be quite a bit ahead to deal with adoption laws and with discrimination in the workplace, and then, you know, we moving on to transgender issues. So the more strength we can build around us as a community, as a protected class and force, kind of, you know, the brighter, you know, we paint the rainbow on ourselves as a community to say, you know, we cannot be ignored as we have been in the past. I think really that's a good standing for the next few months and years worth of cases that are going to come down the way. to kind of clear up all the untidy loose ends of equality that are still going to remain after the marriage discussion is settled.
Oh, my goodness. Somebody here, you sound absolutely 180 degrees from our last interview about a year and a half ago. You were talking about your acting career, and now it looks like you might be launching a political career. My little prediction is yes.
Well, I appreciate your endorsement. Thank you. Yeah,
it's a good endorsement.
You know, I strongly believe in putting up or shutting up, and I care not just about our community, but so many things. You know, I'm a product of a public school education in the state of Florida. I went to a public university, go Gators. My sisters are teachers. My father and my partner are small business owners. There is so much in my immediate life that is evocative of the greater American story, and
right.
It inspires me to want to do something for so many different groups of people that need a champion. And so a couple months back, I was speaking at a dinner for the National Gay and Lesbian Chamber of Commerce and was approached by a few people who have relationships with the Victory Fund, who said, when you're ready to be an openly gay candidate, you let us know and we'll start working you through the process. And
mm-hmm.
I've started to put some pieces together. So hopefully you'll be getting some yard signs from me to stick in your front lawn soon.
And when are you going to come back to Florida?
Anytime I can.
To run for office.
Oh, no, I'm a New Yorker now. My heart will always be in Florida, I promise. My family is there, so I'm down all the time. But, you know, we've got some really great people doing some good work, yourself included, with Equality Florida and,
right.
you know, and great new young leaders stepping up to the plate like Joe Saunders.
Stop. What is
all right.
You know, I always do gossip on my show. This is a gay show, so let's put our Paris Hilton hats on.
Okay.
What do you know about my friend Joe Saunders? I'm a Broward chair for Equality Florida. Joe was our field director, worked for us for many years. When he switched hats, and now he's now District 49 state representative, the newly elected openly gay state representative, won by 12 points over a Tea Party guy who was outspent 9-1. Karl Rove put money into his opponent's campaign. We still won 12 points ahead. I was there campaigning. I actually was one of their early financial supporters, my partner and I. So what do you have to tell me gossipy about Joe Saunders? Ooh, go.
The history on Joe and I, not only are both young gay political aspirants, but we went to high school together, and I'm sure somewhere in the J.P. Taravella High School, yearbooks, some ridiculous photos of us doing, you know, drama club musicals. I was pretty head over heels when I was a young man. You know, that's one of the perks of being out in a place like South Florida is I have the privilege of coming out at 16,
right.
being around some other awesome young people who had it lucky by growing up in such a positive area.
Right.
And, you know, that's why I still keep in touch with great, inspiring young leaders like Joe, because I think they have a story to tell about the fact that they didn't wait to come out, and that they can inspire other young people wherever they live that may not have it so easy to just assert themselves and start embracing their future by embracing themselves wherever they are.
That's great. That is just amazing, and it's very heartwarming to hear something from you like that. That is so super. So what? I saw some pictures of you with David Mixner at a vigil on the 21st.
Oh.
I know, what a guy, huh?
For any of your listeners don't know, I mean, this man has served how many presidents of the United States? How many he has counseled senators and congressmen, and has been there, has been. You know,
right.
whispering in their ear on behalf of the community for
right.
decades. Now, this man
right.
is the very definition of hero.
Oh, I know.
And we're neighbors in New York City, which, you know, that's one of the things one of the things that I love most about my work now that I have this public life is people that I got to look up to as heroes are now
right.
sharing green rooms with me before we
right.
speak on TV together and that sort of thing.
I
and,
know.
You know, I got to encounter David through some community events, and it led to us, you know, having lunch one day, and all I could think was, I'm sitting at a lunch table with a man, you know, whose books I read and who,
I know.
Whose lectures I listened to, who literally changed my life, and he's buying me lunch right now. What is my life?
I know, and you know what? I work in politics down here. I took him to dinner once. Like, oh, will you take him to dinner before you take him to the airport? And I went, and I was going, I'm sitting across from David Mixer, and I was like, I would have like said, you know who this man is, and you know, blah blah blah. And it was like, I just, and the words out of his mouth, and the anecdotes of living in the White House every day. I don't know if people know David Mixer was Bill Clinton's personal legal counsel until Clinton screwed him over on Don't Ask, Don't Tell. And he wrote a wonderful book, A Stranger Among Friends, which has sold millions of copies in about 8 or 10 different languages, because it really takes you inside the Clinton White House, really gives you a pretty good idea of how brave David Mixer was and continues to be. Our voice, and he's kind of like one of our, like Patrick Henry's Give Me Liberty or Give Me Death, and we both have met him like close up, and it's like, oh my God, who's this man? You know, why is he right? Like, he's real, and of course he's large.
And he's just despite, you know, all the man can speak with such bravado and be such I mean, when he walks in a room, the air is sucked out because he is just so powerful, and yet is this gentle giant. And just this past week on Sunday, he gathered what I thought was just going to be a couple of people, turned into 100 in Times Square, you know, the crossroads of the world, holding candles or holding, you know, now that we've got those iPhone apps with a candle built in, you know, holding up anything that glows, and just taking a moment of silence, no speeches, no banners.
Right.
As he said, just bearing witness to this truly auspicious moment that lies ahead for us, that we are on our way to equality sooner than later, and you know, and God willing, in all of our lifetimes.
Have you seen the two covers for Time Magazine this week, by the way?
I know.
I've got them in front of me. And the thing is,
fantastic.
You know, SCOTUS, Supreme Court hasn't made up their minds. I think America has made up their minds. I think America has made up their minds. When Time Magazine puts that out there, it's so mainstream. It's so regular. It's so there. I mean, I think we won. I think we won Tuesday and Wednesday. I think no matter what the decision, we won. How do you feel about that? Yeah.
Well, we are in the hearts and minds of the American people now. We are we are part of the discussion, and you know, for anyone, you know, my parents' age and older that lived through seeing the civil rights struggle, and
I'm your parents' age.
who lived through, you know, seeing Roe v. Wade and seeing these kind of landmark decisions that shaped modern America. And seeing that not only has America survived, but flourished by being as inclusive and as free as possible, you know, we're months away from seeing another truly incredible moment. And win or lose in the Supreme Court on this battle, the groundwork has been laid for what has to be seen as an inevitability that equality is coming. You can't deny it.
No, I agree. We have 90 seconds left. Is amazing. Fastest 30 minutes of your life.
Wow.
Young 20-something-year-old comes up to you. I work with some high school kids. They come up to you and they say, God, I'm pissed. What can I do? What's your answer?
Get online. Find the groups. Find wherever you live in all 50 states, there is a group out there dedicated toward equality. Find an issue that matters to you. It doesn't have to be marriage equality. It could be bullying. It could be the environment, for all that matters. Because you know,
when
you are married and you have you do have kids with your same sex partner, you're going to want your kid to live somewhere with clean water and clean air. So you know, it doesn't have to be these kind of awe-inspiring social issues. Find something that matters to you that makes you want to shoot out of bed in the morning and change the world. and go for it with all you can. Let the, you know, use social media, use all these tools out there, and you can change the world, you know, one click and one changed mind at a time.
Hey, we've got like 10 seconds left. You are a jewel, Jonathan, and I love you. We're going to have you back. Thank you and good night.
Thank you. Everyone bug me on Twitter, at JD Lovitz. I would love to hear from you.
Thanks. Bye-bye. Good night.
Bye-bye. Thanks. Good night.